Grizzly One.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Eight minutes after the hour five, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, taking you on the drive home at five. And the focus last night was the stunning setback of the president in supporting Big Luther, as he did Friday on the stage in Alabama. And then, did what he typically does when he improvs, got distracted, deflected, and started to attack the NFL Combine. And you know the rest of the story there. But apparently his support for Luther Strange to remain the U.S. Senator of Alabama was for naught, as Judge Roy Moore won with 55% of the vote. That was the candidate of Mark Levin. He was promoting him vigorously, who follows us from 6 to 9 right here at WABC. So last night on the stage, here was Judge Roy Moore talking about, hey, don't let the press confuse you in terms of my support for the president.
Together we can make America great. We can support the president. Don't let anybody in the press think that because he supported my opponent that I do not support him and support his agenda. As long as it's constitutional, as long as it advances our society, our culture, our country, I will be supportive.
And then he talked about how big money can't buy the peeps of Alabama.
They've resented the $30 million plus coming from Washington, D.C. to control their vote. You can't buy the people of Alabama. You can't make them vote a certain way. It's their right. It's their choice. And I think the people saw that, felt that, and voted that way.
And the Grim Reaper was there, Steve Bannon. He was emceeing the evening's victory celebration, saying it's just the first of other battles against the country club Republicans. But on the line to discuss it from a local point of view is Matt Murphy, radio host from Birmingham, Alabama. Thanks for joining us again, Matt, on the drive home at 5.
Curtis, a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Matt, all politics is local, and I know most of the focus was that Judge Moore was on the far right, obviously a Tea Party-style candidate, a Steve Bannon-style candidate against the McConnell-Paul Ryan candidate that Strange was. But really, wasn't there more to it why Republicans rejected the sitting senator over what I guess they viewed as moral corruption?
Well, one of the things the national networks are not covering, Curtis, and I'm glad that you are, the local connection between, or the statewide connection between, the then Attorney General Luther Strange and the governor that appointed him, Robert Bentley. And it was the poisonous tree that poisoned the fruit that led to the people of Alabama rejecting Luther Strange. And it really had precious little to do, although there's a lot of respect in the state for Roy Moore, precious little to do with Roy Moore. The Bentley appointment was tainted from day one. Luther Strange was supposedly investigating this governor for corruption while in office. And while he wouldn't say one way or the other whether he was investigating him, he accepted an appointment from that governor to be the next senator. So all along, we're asking the question, were you investigating him when you accepted this appointment? Is that not a thing of value? He wouldn't answer the question. He claimed that he was a Washington outsider. He had been a lobbyist for 15 years in Washington, D.C., lived on Pennsylvania Avenue, just down from the White House. He claimed to be a Trump supporter from day one. We all know that he was going to Mountain Brook, Alabama, fundraisers for Jeb Bush. So this guy, you know, he claimed to be something that he wasn't. And Alabama saw through that, and they decided to go a different direction.
Now let's go back to the governor himself, because it struck me that the governor had some similar, passions like the former governor, now congressman in South Carolina, Mark Sanford. He really had a squeeze on the side of Gumata, correct?
He did. He decided he was going to go outside of his marriage of 52 years. He does so. He gets caught at it. Rumors swirl in Montgomery. He begins to cover it up by using state resources to do so, which led to an investigation by the Attorney General's office. Well, the Attorney General seems to be slow walking this thing. There's no question that Luther Strange wants the appointment. There's no question that he's hopeful that Donald Trump wins election so that Jeff Sessions gets an appointment to Attorney General or otherwise. And as he slow walks this thing, people become more and more suspicious that maybe this guy's doing so for the purposes of getting an appointment to the United States Senate, which is ultimately what occurred. Now, very soon after that happened, the whole house of cards falls. Bentley goes down in flames, has to resign in disgrace. Then Governor Kay Ivey accepts she becomes the next governor of the state of Alabama and immediately calls for a special election, recognizing how tainted the appointment was to begin with.
So that really affected, you believe, the outcome of this Republican primary for the U.S. Senate, not?
Well, I was not at all surprised with the reaction that Alabamians had to the appointment. They were shocked and appalled that Luther Strange would accept it. And let me tell you, I believe that Luther Strange was well known enough that if he had not accepted the appointment from Governor Robert Bentley, if he had just waited his turn, ran for election in an open seat, it's very likely that he could have been the next senator. He could now, you know, he'll serve out his term for the next 6 or 8 months or whatnot, but it's very likely that he could have been the senator for as long as he wanted it. But instead, he decided to grab it, and you see the outcome.
Now, I got to tell you, listening to Judge Roy Moore on the campaign stump, I know he was interviewed recently. He was asked by a radio reporter about DACA. He was totally flummoxed. He had no idea what DACA was. And this is a guy that Mark Levin will constantly refer to as a constitutional scholar. How could you know about the Constitution and not know anything about DACA?
Well, I will tell you that Roy Moore is a Constitution guy. I don't know that Roy Moore is your strongest policy guy. He's got a lot of getting up to speed to do before he beats Doug Jones in December and becomes the next U.S. Senator from Alabama. I think that he's done a lot of that between July and now. Roy Moore, what he represents to the people, he represents a guy of conviction. They know that he's not going to step out of his lane. He's going to follow the Constitution, even if it means, even if I disagree with him on policy, even if it means that the people of Alabama or the people of the United States disagree with him on principle, he's going to stay to his conviction. He's not going to get bought off by the McConnells of the world, and I think that's what they were voting for. They'll forgive him a little lack of information with regard to policy, or a lot of lack of information with regard to policy.
All right, but Matt Murphy, the guy got sacked from the bench not once, but twice. First over the Ten Commandments issue, and then over the fact that he would not uphold the federal statute allowing for gay marriage.
Well, look, I said from the get-go that the worst thing that Luther Strange did, of all of the bad things he did, McConnell support, trashing other conservatives, claiming to be a Washington outsider, of course, the Bentley appointment, the worst thing that he did was turn me into a Roy Moore supporter, because I disagreed with him on the Ten Commandments monument issue, and I disagreed with him on the gay marriage issue. At the same time, the people saw that he was willing to sacrifice his role in state government for the courage of his convictions, genuinely felt like the federal judges that were appointed by liberals were wrong. If he was willing to sacrifice that, they felt like he couldn't be bought off at very least. And that's what they feel like Washington has become, just a cesspool of insiders.
And then lastly, in the general election now in December, the Democrat, what chance, if any, does he have of beating Judge Roy Moore to become the next U.S. Senator of Alabama, replacing Jeff Sessions?
Well, look, he's got a chance in as much as that he's on the ballot. The last time a Democrat was elected to the U.S. Senate in Alabama was 1992, and that guy immediately flipped in 1994. His name's Richard Shelby. He's still in Washington, D.C. I don't see much of a chance, if at all, that a Democrat gets elected. However, the Democrats, the National Democrats, are going to send millions of dollars down to Alabama to try to convince Alabama otherwise. And, you know, the guy's on the ballot, so I guess there's always a shot, Curtis.
Do appreciate that. That's Matt Murphy. He's a radio host from Birmingham, Alabama, giving us the skinny. Because remember, all politics is local, and in all the national broadcasts, it was never reported that Big Luther Strange, the favorite of Donald Trump, was tainted because it was felt he was covering up the corruption of the governor, who had the gumada, the home slice on the side. and he was biding his time so that he could be chosen to replace Jeff Sessions. Now, if that story had been told, we wouldn't have heard all this mumbo-jumbo that it was about, oh, he's just a country club Republican versus Judge Moore, the Tea Party candidate.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
No, I'm not a juvenile delinquent.
5:24 as we continue there in the drive home at 5. You happen to be up in the Bronx earlier today, outside of the Bronx Zoo and the West Farms area. There's a school there called the Urban Assembly School for Wildlife Conservation. They've changed all these names of these schools. They give them these long titles. You know, it used to be Boys and Girls High School. It would be simply Evander Charles. Now they have these long explanations and names. And the reason it's come to our attention is that apparently in the midst of a history class, there was a confrontation that had been brewing for a while. An 18-year-old apparently pulled out a shiv, stabbed two kids, fellow classmates, one dead, one seriously injured. On the line to discuss it is Gregory Floyd. He's the president of the Teamsters Union Local 237. That's the union that is responsible for the security officers who are assigned to the New York City public school system. Thanks for joining us again, Greg, here at the Drive Home at 5.
Thank you, Curtis, and I'm so sorry to be joining you on such a solemn occasion.
What can you tell us about this particular stabbing within the school, high school facility itself?
I could tell you that it was a fight that ensued in the classroom about 10:45 a.m., where it involved a few students, and two of them were stabbed. One was fatally stabbed. The other one is clinging to life. And the third one is in custody for the stabbings.
And are there any metal detectors at this particular public high school?
There are no metal detectors at this public high school. There are only 88 schools that have metal detectors. And we had suggested to the Mayor de Blasio when he first took office and the first incident happened and the first gun was found that he had metal detectors in all of the schools. Of course, I was met with ridicule because, you know, he's a mayor and that wants to eliminate the metal detectors from the schools. And that's what he signed a committee to explore doing that. And we fought him on every turn to keep metal detectors in schools. And we tried to get him to put more metal detectors in schools. I was ridiculed by a lot of people saying that I wanted to have all of these schools have metal detectors. If that's possible, I would say yes, because of what happened today and what can happen in the future. We were only setting ourselves up for fatality because the last two school years began with firearms being brought into the schools. And we had firearms the last 2 years, the first day. And it only got worse. Weapons, drugs, these things are constantly coming into our schools. And the mayor is downplaying these incidents. And I got to say to the parents, you must tell the mayor what you want. These are our children. Do not allow him to dictate to you how they should be protected.
But you know what's so interesting, Gregory Floyd, is that earlier today when the mayor had a press conference on the issue of the two stabbings that led to the one teenager dying and the other, as you mentioned, being seriously injured, he said, oh, tomorrow a special security team is going to be assigned to the school and there will be metal detectors put into effect. So does the mayor just react to a problem and then install metal detectors after the fact?
Well, that's what you're doing. Do you think a child is going to bring a knife to school tomorrow after this happened, knowing that the metal detectors and everything's going to be there? Or do they wait till next week when the lights go off and the cameras aren't there and the reporters aren't there and they got to worry about their protection and they know metal detectors aren't there, so they bring more knives and guns into the schools because they're afraid of what just happened?
Well, now,
you need a permanent metal detector there now. You don't need to bring it there for a week and just placate the parents. And if I'm a parent of a child in that school, I don't allow this to happen without saying put a metal detector there permanently. We're not going for your, okay, there's a problem today, and moving it around, and we're going to put metal detectors there today.
And why
do you want a metal detector in that school and every high school in this city.
Gregory, why do you think the mayor is so stubborn and obstinate on this issue and insisting that he would like a school system to be metal detector free?
For the same reason that he allows pot and other small level crimes to go on. He's a left-leaning person that does not believe in law and order. That's my opinion. Why? Because every time you look in his law and order, he seems to lessen the penalties and rules and regulations. He just does not seem like a rule and regulation person. He doesn't seem like a disciplinary. This is not the 70s where we could go around and everything is free. These are the 2000s, these are millennials. There's a lot of terror going around. People need discipline. You cannot take your eyes off of people these days. We are living in dangerous times, and the situation calls for that.
Right, and then lastly, Greg, on behalf of the security officers who are assigned to the public school system, how difficult is their job nowadays under the leadership of Bill de Blasio and the Department of Education?
Well, their jobs are difficult because they're being understaffed. At night, the high schools right now, the high schools are closed, the schools are closed, but there are programs going on. They are working short-staffed because the police department and the Department of Education and the city has refused to put the number of people on that's necessary. So what they're doing is they're cutting back on overtime to save money on their budget. So it's only a matter of time before something happens at night on these programs. The school safety agents are being outnumbered, they're being understaffed, and they're being used as political pawns by not staffing them properly. And something's going to happen, and then this is not going reported because these things are just kept quiet. But I'm telling you and your listeners that the schools at night are understaffed, and there's danger there. The metal detectors, people bringing in weapons, the incidents, people coming in and out of those schools, there's no control.
You appreciate that. That's Gregory Floyd, as president of the Teamsters Union Local 237. They're in charge for all of our security officers who were assigned to the massive public school system in New York. And I will tell you this. Comrade Bill de Blasio, who has allowed kids to take their cell phones into the schools that has created mishigash, just undue problems, would like there to be no metal detectors in any of the schools. If he had his druthers, if he had his ways. How stupidly naive is this guy, this part-time mayor, this dope from Park Slope?
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air. Online. On the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
Well, come on, all of you big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam. Way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're going to have a whole lot of fun. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for?
5:39. I remember there was a time at City Hall during the days of John Lindsay when he was mayor. He lowered the City Hall American flag to half staff in honor of those students who had been killed at Kent State. And a city councilman at the time, Matty Troy, went to the roof and he raised that flag back up to full staff. And then he was supported by construction workers who came from nearby construction sites in the lower part of Manhattan to applaud that raising of the flag. Well, today, something similar occurred. Some members of the city council decided to go outside, take a knee as a show of solidarity for NFL team members, and then they came back inside, and when the national anthem was played before session, they decided to sit on their tuchus. On the line to discuss what was transpiring is one of their colleagues, Joe Borelli, New York City councilman from Staten Island, Republican, conservative, Reform Party candidate. Joe, can you sort of describe what was transpiring?
Well, hey, Curtis, I'm glad you mentioned the construction worker protest, because I'm proud to say my father was there applauding Councilman Troy when he raised that flag up, and he still talks about it to this day. But I got to be honest, it wasn't as bad as people think today, because I went into today's hearing thinking that almost every council member would be sitting for the pledge, and there'd be only four or five of us who proudly stood as we normally would. But I am somewhat pleased to say that it was about 25 or 26 of us who had the decency and the patriotism and respect for our flag to stand up when it was saluted. So it could have been worse, but it was for those 20 or so people who stood, it was as disgraceful and unrepentant, just disregard for what America stands for, and that's, in my opinion, very disgusting.
And I understand that your personal antidote to what some of your colleagues were doing by sitting during the Pledge of Allegiance in the New York City Council was you were wearing what kind of American patriotic garb?
Well, I had a wonderful American flag-themed tie and my American flag pin, which I wear all the time, usually with the Blue Lives Matter flag attached to it. But it was, you know, look, it was funny. Justin and I, your stalwart producer and I, were just discussing how difficult it was to get anyone who knelt for the pledge today to come on the show, because these are people who don't even have the courage to come out here and to try to defend their actions when they're asked to explain themselves. And that to me is the most upsetting thing about this, is that half the members that were doing it were doing it just to be followers of whatever it is in heck these NFL protesters are protesting. And I'm not saying we should not have protests. I'm not saying we shouldn't allow people from protesting in the manner in which they choose. I'm just saying that if you choose to do it in this way, people are going to think you're a jerk, and I'm one of them, and I'm going to proudly wear my patriotism on my sleeve in response.
Well, I noticed one of the ringleaders of the sit-down for the Pledge of Allegiance and the bending of the knee outside of City Council chambers today was Jumaane Williams, one of the same city council people who would like to tear down the monument of Christopher Columbus at 59th Street, Columbus Circle. And with the Columbus Day Parade coming up, I would think they would probably link all of this somehow together in a mishigosh mishmash.
Well, yeah, if you talk to them, it's pretty much all in the same thing, and it usually involves something to do with Trump. And if you're looking for the ringleaders on all the frivolous stupidity that goes on in the city council, oftentimes you'll find Jumaane Williams sitting firmly on the throne of this little empire of wackiness, essentially. But, you know, it's important to note he wasn't the only one. There were people there that genuinely surprised me that they would do this. And I would think that they would be eager to be out there defending their actions, and yet what you see right now is them cowering away. Look, I go on CNN, I go on MSNBC, and I take what their audience perceives as unpopular positions, but I'm happy to defend it because this is what I believe in. I'm shocked and appalled that some of these people wouldn't be out there trying to make sense of the actions they took. Because in reality, all they want to do is just chime in and be like the people that are on television now generating this controversy.
Now, did any of them tell you why they chose to sit during the Pledge of Allegiance and show disrespect to our country?
No, and there was a discussion prior that some of the members would be kneeling outside in solidarity with, you know, Colin Kaepernick, et cetera. And to be honest, there's a protest every day in front of City Hall. It would have made, you know, barely a headline. But someone like Jumaane Williams, he's been sitting for the pledge for over a year now. And I've asked him over and over again what he's accomplished by doing that. And essentially, you hear crickets. I mean, if anything, certainly the movement in his mind has grown. But has there been any, you know, changes to anything? And that's what we as conservatives can't let happen. When we talk about how it's disrespectful for people to see you kneel for the pledge, the argument often gets twisted by liberals into somehow them accusing us of saying that racism doesn't exist in America. And that's not what we're saying at all. Of course it exists. But we're saying that it's disgraceful to protest our flag. It's disgraceful to protest our anthem. It's disgraceful to protest our Pledge of Allegiance. And I believe that as the duly elected government of the city of New York, we have a moral obligation to declare our allegiance to our national government every time we do business.
Well, do appreciate that. That's Joe Borelli, New York City Councilman from Staten Island, Republican, Conservative, Reform Party line candidate this time around. But let's talk about Jumaane Williams. Nothing more than a chicken. He was given an opportunity to appear on the drive home at 5. He texted back and forth with Justin B. Love, our producer. And he wouldn't come on the show to explain why he chose to take a knee outside of city council chambers, or why he decided to sit down on his big tuchus during the Pledge of Allegiance. You see, you lose complete respect for individuals when they won't equivocate. They won't talk about why they do certain things that are so offensive to so many of you out there, including myself. Why would you do that? Why would you be disrespectful to the Pledge of Allegiance, to the playing of our national anthem? Well, maybe the next thing that Jumaane Williams wants to do to gather attention, since he loves to style and profile but not appear and explain himself, is burn an American flag, right? Maybe he could have his BVDs, his Fruit of the Loom, made in the style of the American flag and then light it up. And so instead of just the flag getting lit up, he'd get lit up too. You're nothing but a chicken. You're chicken, Jumaane Williams. You're chicken.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa.
On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa. Live.
My boy Curtis Sliwa.
Local.
There's a guy in a red hat.
On it.
Everybody listens to Curtis.
77 WABC.
As we continue here on the drive home at 5, as the end of the San Gennaro Festival brings a conclusion to what is happening in Little Italy, at the very same time, there was a release earlier today of a trailer about a movie made by Giancarlo Jr., who was involved in idolatry over his degenerate, murderous, mob-thugging father, Giancarlo Sr., and it stars John Travolta. And what is so interesting about this trailer is the movie is expected to come out during the Christmas season. Is that the kind of a Christmas movie you'd be going to look at the life and times of the marauding killer known as Giancarlo Sr., as described by his adoring son, Giancarlo Jr.? Let me give a little bit of a taste. Put your beak into the trough and sort of feel this propaganda.
Let me tell you something. New York is the greatest city in the world. My city. I was a kid in these streets, and I made it to the top.
Sounds like Bo Dietl.
I made my bones doing a piece of work for Don Carlo Gambino. Like that, I became a made man.
Really?
Dad, I'm thinking maybe take a year off. You want to hang out with me?
Do you know what you're doing to this family?
I will build something that nobody can destroy.
Salute.
Paul Castellano was a fish in the desert. I never respected Paul.
You killed the boss's boss. You would bring down hellfire.
There is no choice.
Body killing. Day gets...
Port of all five boroughs. Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Staten Island, the Bronx.
Our job now is to maintain leadership. I nominate John Gotti.
Ah, the chin wasn't in favor of that.
Let everybody know. Now everybody comes to me.
Really? I'm so proud of you.
You should be running your own crew now.
Mr. Gotti, are you the head of the Gambino crime family?
I'm the head of my family.
Mrs. Gotti, do you know what your husband does for a living?
He provides.
John's getting too much press. That can't go unchecked.
Blow him up!
It was meant for you.
Should have blown him up in that
car. Kind of scrutiny before.
What were you saying on the tapes?
I said a lot of things that could get a lot of people in trouble.
Dad, say a word, I'll go over a cliff for you.
You swore to me that you would not bring him into that world.
This life of Oz is a wonderful life.
Really?
If you can get away with it.
Johnson has been an informant for the FBI.
It's a damn lie!
Order!
You fight till you can't fight no more.
Definitely.
Never like... back off, ever.
Gotti, Gotti, Gotti. That's Schifo shot. Spachi.
We walk together and we fall together. This is the life.
Oh, boy, wouldn't you want to see that movie during the Christmas time holidays? Hey, kids, forget the Rockettes and the Rockefeller Center Christmas show. We're going to see the John Gotti Sr. movie about death, destruction, and extorting, racketeering, arson, the whole nine yards. But this was a piece that was created by Giancarlo Jr. a long time ago, a form of idolatry. Now, you know this is not based on the facts. Because I can guarantee you there is an episode that is missing in action. Maybe it made the cutting floor, because you know damn well they will not have any element of this movie talking about how John Gotti Sr. gave the orders to his son, John Gotti Jr., the underboss of the Gambino crime family, in his absence while he was in jail, to whack yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, because I was maligning them on a regular basis right here on WABC Radio, which used to stand for Always Broadcasting Curtis. And I was trouncing the Gottis and the Gambinos and Italian organized crime. And then as a result of that, John Gotti Sr. said, whack him, silence him. I don't want to ever hear that prick again talking about our family and this thing of ours. And dutifully, John Gotti Jr. went out and attempted to do that. Luckily, I'm here today after having gotten shot with 5 hollow point bullets through my lower extremities for voicing my First Amendment rights and free speech. We talk about that. And I didn't have to take a knee to do that. But I certainly had to spend a lot of time in the hospital with 2 reverse operations. But you know something? It was all worth it to know that the Don of all Dons, the Capo de Tutti, John Gotti Sr., died of throat cancer in Marion Correctional Facility and went straight to hell without an asbestos suit. So, oofah to your movie, John Gotti Jr.